I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks.
Hello and welcome back to the Larger Living Podcast English Edition, where I introduce you to amazing people that helped me in my journey to become comfortable in the skin I'm in. People from the health at every size sphere, intuitive eating sphere, fat acceptance, fat activism sphere, and adjacent spheres, of course, as well. Sadly, you know, these interviews are pre-recorded, and this one was recorded in February of 2021. And sadly, in the meantime, shit happens. Life happens, and sometimes also death happens. So it really makes me sad to tell you that the person that you will hear very soon is no longer with us. We're talking about Kat Posey today, and I'm in a way still talking with her. So that fills me with joy again and makes me smile a little to at least, you know, be able to introduce her to you. She was a fat studies researcher at the University of Massey, New Zealand. And I had the utmost joy, pleasure, and privilege to actually meet her in person in 2017, I think, 2017 in Berlin for a fat activism panel where she was invited to, and the screening of the movie Fatitude, which is an amazing movie. If you have the chance to see it in your life, go and see it. And I think that Lindsay Averill, one of the two creators, was there to answer questions. And it was an amazing week or weekend back then. I don't remember exactly. And I met Kat, and we've been to Monster Onsens. Any of you who don't know Monster Onsens, a very queer, very vibrant, very fun karaoke place in Berlin with individual karaoke booths, like, you know, Japanese style. And we sang together. And her favorite karaoke song was London Rain by Heather Nova. So whenever I listen to that song now, I think of Kat. Kat laughed a lot, was such a vibrant and a kind individual, making sure that everyone around her was, you know, having a great experience. When you listen to the rest of the podcast and the interview, just keep in mind how wonderful Kat was. And just to highlight a few things that she's done, she published like a lot of articles, spoke on so many forums for fat acceptance, weight inclusive healthcare, or, you know, equity in healthcare for larger bodied individuals. She herself was a super fat or infinifat. And she's one of the two editors, alongside Sonia Renee Taylor, of the Routledge International Handbook of Fat Studies. And I will include the links to this book in the description down below in the show notes. And now, without any further ado, let's go to the interview. Hello and welcome, Kat Posey, to the Larger Living Podcast. I'm so excited.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so keen to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. Why I'm so excited is that Kat Posey is one of the world's leading scholars in fat studies. Now, that's right. That's totally a thing. And we're going to talk about it in a minute. Sorry, I just have to laugh because I see her smile all over her face right now. And I very share the same sentiment. Fat studies is totally a legit field of science. and we are going to talk about it. I met her personally, or I met you personally, in Berlin 4 years ago. We just figured out that it was during your sabbatical 4 years ago. We sang karaoke together. We have been to some talks together. And it is absolutely delightful to meet you again. It was absolutely delightful to meet you back then. I just think you are so eloquent, and this is why I think this is going to be such a hoot today. So I know you, of course. I think you're a fucking force of nature, and I mean that in the best possible way ever, because how you command a stage when you give a talk like that is just gold. And also, you're so incredibly kind. You are so incredibly warm and kind, and that just makes my heart go fuzzy whenever I get to talk to you and meet you. You have your PhD for a reason. You're super smart, and you are able to break down complex sociocultural phenomenons in an easy way so that people can understand them. And I think that this is a very rare quality in science in general. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have you here. And yeah, I think this is going to be a real good one.
Yeah, Dot, I'm so pleased that you invited me. I mean, first and foremost, I'm so glad that you're making a podcast. I'm a fervent supporter of FAT podcasts, of FAT Positive Radio. And I've been really pleased by how many new ones have been popping up in the last 2 or 3 years. There have been probably over 20 that I can name, all over the world too, which is great as well, because so much of the activism and stuff that is often visible comes from the United States and the UK, and that's it. So it's been really great to see FAT podcasts popping up with real regularity from people all over the world, including now yours in Germany. So I'm really excited that you're doing it. I'm very honored to be a guest on your show today. And I hope that the conversation that we have will be both informative for your listeners, but also maybe cause some discomfort. I think it's always really good to cause people to be a bit uncomfortable and have them sit with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, you're a podcast veteran. I forgot to mention that. I'm so sorry. You have your podcast, Friends of Marilyn, for 10 years. 10 years. So, I'm not wanting to age you or age shame you or anything in that regard. That was not my intention. But you're an absolute veteran. You have been doing this for a long time. You know your shit around it. You are organizing so, so much, and we absolutely will talk about it. But I really think that it's most beneficial to the listeners right now to just know a little bit more about FAT studies, if you don't mind, and just explain to people what is FAT studies even, what is that?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good place to start, because I think that a lot of people have never heard of FAT studies. And I think there's a large group of the population that if you were to suggest that there's a field of scholarship called FAT studies, they would just kind of roll their eyes and be like, just what we need, one more, feel good identity-based politic kind of area of scholarship. But FAT studies is a thing. In its current kind of iteration, we can kind of trace it back to say it's only about maybe kind of 20 or so years old. But we can also point to scholars who've been doing work that we would classify as FAT studies for much longer. In its really base sense, FAT studies is a field about fatness. It's a field that centers fatness, it centers fat people, it centers fat bodies, and it does so without any kind of deficit position. And so that's one of the things that makes it quite unique from other fields like obesity studies or weight science that also study fat bodies, but do so from a deficit start of assuming that there's something wrong, something abnormal, something problematic, if you will, about fatness and fat bodies. fat studies, it really did grow out of activism. So in a lot of ways, it's very similar to like women's studies and queer studies and disability studies, where you had scholars from a lot of different home disciplines who were active in activism and political activism around those topics, and finding that they were bringing more and more of that into their scholarship and wanting to build up a literature that could contradict kind of the quote unquote, like what everybody knows about, you know, that population, that group of the population. And so like those disciplines, it is interdisciplinary. So people who study fat studies and who engage in the scholarship come from a range of host disciplines, from the social sciences, the physical sciences, health, medicine, law, humanities. You know, there really is no limit to the way that people can come into the field. Yeah, so I think that's a nice overall picture of what it means when we talk about fat studies as a field.
Yeah, yeah. It's more than just a few angry fat people coming together and demanding equal rights. That's way more than that.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to say, I think one of the things, and I argued this in my work, that one of the ways that fat studies as an academic discipline is differentiated from other disciplines that do study fatness is the fact that there is a liberatory underpinning. Fat study scholarship is underpinned in part by the desire for fat liberation. I think it's useful and for the scholarships and the scholars to embrace that. I don't think there's use to those of us doing the scholarships try to pretend that that's not an aspect of what we're doing. And again, there are those people that would then say, well, that's not good science. And, you know, you're supposed to be apolitical and objective. And I mean, you know, certain people operating under certain paradigms, you know, might believe that that's true about knowledge and science and ontology, but that doesn't float my boat. And that doesn't fit in very well with most of the other scholars, especially in critical areas that I know.
Yeah, so true. I mean, if we're talking about research, we also have to factor in who is paying for the research to begin with. That is just the first thing. Research in general. Also STEM research.
Yeah. Well, and what kind of questions people are asking.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I think that's one of the things that people, you know, often kind of fail to recognize is simply by asking question A rather than question B, the individual has put their own subjectivity into it.
Yep.
You know, so there's no such thing as a science that's completely objective. And I very much working from a contextual paradigm that embraces fat epistemology, I actually don't want objectivity in the kind of scholarship that I'm doing. That isn't useful for me in the kinds of questions that I'm looking at and the kinds of scholastic endeavors that I am pursuing myself.
Yeah, yeah. We talked a little bit before we started to record that the thing that is so important about fat studies in particular and another identity-led academic interdisciplinary work research is that it just there's no use to establish a field of research that has othering at its root. So you said that you wrote a great piece and I was mentioning it too, that is called Nothing About Us Without Us That Bothers from Black History or BIPOC History, better said, to include more people.
Yeah, the disability community, mostly that particular phrase stems from disability activism. I have long been a big believer in the need for a fat epistemology within fat study scholarship. So one of the, again, defining characteristics for me of fat studies as a field is that most of the literature that we have around fatness has not been produced by fat people, about fat people, for the needs of fat people.
Yeah.
And usually, actually, it's been completely largely divorced from people altogether. Most of the literature that we have around fatness, most of the time when people talk about fatness, they talk about obesity and like the war on obesity, like that isn't a war on fat people. And so I think, you know, embracing a fat epistemology, which is the idea that fat people are the ones that know best what it's like to live in fat bodies. They are experts on their own experiences. They are authorities on what it is to be fat. Embracing a fat epistemology for me is one of the, should be one of the defining characteristics of fat city scholarship. And again, what might separate it from another field like weight science, where, you know, they might be doing really interesting work to understand things like fat stigma and oppression and discrimination, but, you know, they're not embracing a fat epistemology. And if you're not embracing a fat epistemology, then for me, you're not doing fat study science.
Yep. Yep. Just to mirror it back a little bit of the state of science in Germany. So we just in Germany started really with fat studies. We have the first reader that has been published, I think 10 years ago, something like that, fat studies in Germany. I interviewed on this podcast, I had him on as a guest before, the kind of, yeah, leader of the movement, if you will, Dr. Friedrich Schaub. And it's so in Germany, we cannot look back upon a large history at that. So weight science is still the norm and is still what's been going on and not just fat studies. And my theory on this is that Germans are just, this is a podcast where you're allowed to swear and now I'm going to do it. So Germans are just, we get off on titles. That's really how we do it. We jack off on a good PhD. We love that shit. We love some good diplomas. We don't let anyone in who doesn't have a nice shiny piece of paper hanging on their wall behind them. That is just, it's such an exclusionary club to do science in general in German. And this is why this whole fat epistemology, oh, by the way, epistemology is generation of knowledge, like knowledge making, by the way, if I haven't figured out that or I haven't mentioned that big word to you, this is what we've been talking about in the past few minutes. So yeah, basically universities, studies, any kind of scholarly field doesn't let anyone in who doesn't have at least a academic bachelor's title. And that is it. So it's silencing a lot of fat voices who very well would be very, very qualified to contribute and write something and contribute to the movement. But since they, you know, don't have academic titles, they are not quote unquote worthy. And I think that this is a problem.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And I would say to you, like, that's not a German problem. That's an academia problem.
Of course.
You know, that's true within academia kind of from around the world. And that's one of the reasons. So, I mean, the piece that you mentioned, the Nothing About Us Without Us, Fat People Speak, that's a piece that I co-wrote with a handful of fat activists around the world because it was for an issue of Qualitative Research in Psychology. I think that's the name of the journal. And they had, it was a special issue where they had done a special call that was specifically around kind of issues of communities often neglected. And I thought, oh, you know, talk about a community that is not only neglected by science and scholarship, but has been actively harmed. You know, science has been wielded as a weapon against the fat community for forever. And so I wanted to write a piece about, you know, the necessity of a fat epistemology, and I wanted to write it with activists. And so I'm particularly proud of that piece, actually, because, yeah, it was a really great experience working with people who, as you said, simply because they don't have PhDs attached to their names, would possibly struggle to have gotten into an academic journal in another fashion. So it was really great to work with them in that. And I think that's something that fat studies as a whole is actually quite good about. And so I know that in the Academic Journal of Fat Studies, which turns 10 this year, which is very exciting, it's not uncommon for early scholars, so like, you know, people who are still studying in school, but also activists to have pieces in there. The dedicated Fat Studies conference that I host every 4 years in New Zealand, we always have two keynotes, and one of those is always an activist. So I think Fat Studies, and I can't speak for any other field about this because I don't know really anything about any other field in the sense of how much I know about fat studies, but I can say that fat studies is a really good job as a field of acknowledging the knowledge that's created and disseminated by activists and not kind of holding a tent to say you can't come in if you don't have certain letters after your name or you haven't done a, you know, a certain course of study. So while I agree with you, it is 100% a larger problem within academia, I'm really proud of the field that I'm in because I definitely see us not repeating that mistakes and not engaging in those same exclusionary tactics.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very well said. Very, very well said. So I don't know. I like to ask questions on the podcast to... Yeah, to introduce my guests a little further. So we now know that you are very well versed in fat studies. This is what you've been doing for such a long time. But also, like, who is Kat Posey? Who's Dr. Kat Posey? Who are you? And like, what's behind all this knowledge? What's behind all this activism? And I mean, what brought you into it is just, yeah, clear. You're fat too. But I think that they, yeah. Oh my God. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, I love your humor. Yeah, I love your sense of humor. It's just amazing. So yeah, tell me or tell the listeners a little bit more about your story, please. Like how you got into it.
Yeah, it's always a bit tricky to kind of work out how to begin in that kind of sense. I mean, what I can share is that I was born and raised in Texas in the United States, and I am I'm an only child of two well-educated, white, Catholic, upper middle class parents. And so I had kind of like every advantage bestowed upon me basically when I was younger. And the kind of one main area, I guess you would say, where I didn't experience the privilege that came along with kind of everything else was the fact that I was fat. I've always been fat. I don't have a memory of a time when I wasn't. My dad, I love my dad. My dad's my best friend, but he struggles when I kind of make that claim though, because he pulls out pictures of me when I was really little, like, you know, 4 and 5 years old. And he pulls out pictures of me and he points at them and he goes, "See, you're not a fat kid." But then when I like have them look at the broader picture, like pull out then like a picture from like my school class, I can point out to him that I was the fattest kid in the class. And so like, I might not have been like fat, you know, in the way that some people might identify as fatness, but I was the fattest kid in the class. And so, yeah, I was the fat kid.
Same.
And so there's never been a, yeah. So there's never been a time in my life where I wasn't fat. And I grew up with probably the same kinds of negative experience around that as a lot of fat people do, even though I carried a lot of privilege that mitigated a lot of it. But, you know, I experienced the harassment from friends and from strangers and, you know, the stuff from doctors about, you know, not living to see 30. And, you know, there wasn't a year that went by that my, you know, parents didn't try to bribe me with promises of a new wardrobe and all these other types of things, if I could only just lose the weight. So, I mean, so many of my experiences around that. And of course, the subsequent times I went to war against my own body, right, to try to become something I wasn't, I'm sure are very similar to many other fat people's experiences. Yeah. One thing that I had that I don't know if others had that isn't a story that I necessarily hear as often as the rest of it is I always had a sneaking suspicion that I was okay, that like I wasn't broken, that there wasn't anything wrong with me. And I don't know how much of that is the fact that most of the media that my parents let me consume when I was little was quite feminist. Like they wouldn't have recognized it that way. But like when I go back and think about, because my parents are very careful about what I could consume. Like I couldn't just watch television or those types of things. But again, Catholic, very Catholic, daily mass Catholic on my mom's side.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how much of that was I consumed a lot of feminist media, which, you know, all these bullshit women who, in the face of, you know, all kinds of oppression and sexism and misogyny, just kept going. And, you know, most of them succeeded in the end. I'm not sure if it was that or, you know, if it was just some part of my temperament I was born with. But through it all, until I came to fat politics, I did. I kind of, even when I was at war with my body, there was a sneaking suspicion that, like, I was okay. Like, there wasn't anything wrong with me. If I then jump ahead, because I don't want to take the whole podcast just talking about backstory. When I was doing my PhD, which I did in the field of human development, I was studying what at the time I was calling weight identity in super fat women. So women like myself. Although now we would be called infinity fat, but back then, you know, super fat was the language that I would have used. And it was one of the women that I was interviewing for my PhD at the end of the interview, like after we had finished the interview and we're kind of packing up and stuff, she'd asked me if I'd ever read The Diet Myth by Paul Campos. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I hadn't. And she suggested that I should. And so Dot, at the time, I kind of added it, like the list, the name to the list of all of the books that I was going to get to when I finally finished my PhD. Because for anyone out there who's listening, who's done a PhD, you probably know that you don't really get to do a lot of non-PhD related reading while you're working on the PhD. So when I finished my doctorate and ended up moving to here in New Zealand where I have been since then, I eventually, you know, kind of shook off the stupor of post-PhD life shock and started going through this list of books that I had been putting off, some, you know, fiction books, some other things like The Diet Myth by Paul Campos. And Paul's book changed my life. And I was been lucky enough to meet him and let him know this, but his book was very much a physical science takedown of the obesity science that supports all of the myths around fatness that most of us believe. And for me, that was probably the best way to get to me because, you know, I'm a scientist, I'm a scholar. And so for him to use the tools of, you know, methodology and epistemology and ontology to kind of unpack all of that stuff, like I was like, whoa, it blew my mind. And so from there, like any good kind of scholar, I fell down the hole. And I fell into what I would call the critical obesity science hole, which is Paul Campos, like Michael Gard, Jan Wright, you know, there's Deborah Lupton. There's like a whole group of them doing that kind of work. And that eventually then led me actually into fat politics and fat liberation. And it's, you know, been a whirlwind since then. Probably 2 or 3 years into doing the activism politics stuff is when I really started shifting my frame of scholarship into the fat studies area. And I've never looked back.
Thank you so much for this. I do have the book myself too in my bookshelf. I just didn't want to get up, rush over and get it because that would take too much time off of the podcast. Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
A great book.
It's and awesome.
I don't know. I think it's now actually published under the obesity myth. So like it's had two different titles. It was The Diet Myth when it first came out, but I think it's now called The Obesity Myth. But it's definitely a great text. If anyone's interested in critical obesity studies, that text by Paul is without a doubt something that they would definitely want to have on their bookshelf.
Yeah, absolutely. I have it on my bookshelf too. I will link to it. Absolutely. And I even do you one better because there has been the book by Paul has not to this day, as far as I know, been translated into German. But there is a German author who kind of took it upon himself to write the German equivalent of it. He's called Achim Peters. I really want to invite him to the podcast. And his book is called Mythos Übergewicht, like myth over overweight, the overweight myth, so to speak. So it's not, you know, the very... Yeah, it's not the same thing exactly, but it's the closest thing we have in Germany.
And yeah, sounds close.
Yeah, Yeah, it's really awesome. So I have both books in my bookshelf and I can always hold them into the camera and talk about them when it comes to that. And yeah, my first book that turned me around, or that got me to it book wise, which is not the first piece of media that I got introduced to it, was, and I know that this is absolutely controversial because I do not agree with her anymore whatsoever, is Janine Roth, Feeding the Hungry Heart. And I'm sure that I'm not the first one who is like entering this whole fatosphere from that kind of gate, from that gateway drug, so to speak, or gateway book. Yeah, but it was really what kind of introduced me to intuitive eating in the end, because it was just like, no, you really listen to what your body wants to eat when your body wants to eat it. And you are looking for ways to cope with very, very strong feelings. I'm not sure if I have told you this 4 years ago, but I have bipolar disorder. And so I need to cope with strong feelings on a daily basis. I don't have rapid cycling as much as some other people do. So I don't go through the motions super duper quick. But yeah, so this is how I developed my binge eating after my mom passed away back then. And this is how I got into intuitive eating and then became Germany's first registered certified intuitive eating counselor. And now we are four people. I found out that we are four, and I'm so happy for this, for my colleagues and everything. But yeah, then later I got introduced to the whole fat studies bubble, and this is, oh, people are researching this very much later. So this is my take on it. This is how I got introduced to it, of course. So yeah, and I'm so happy and proud and really grateful that we are both more or less part of this bigger movement to tell fat people that they're okay the way they are. They don't need to change in order to be worthy, because yeah, people of all shapes, sizes, colors, ability levels, ages, heights, whatever, all people on this planet have inherent worth just because they're people. Yeah. In order to say that out loud, even that I have to say that out loud, that makes me sad on the one hand, but also, yeah, empowers me, because it's just like, yeah, it's a radical political act to say, to get up in the morning as a quote unquote deviant person, which is not the norm, which is not, you know, which is not the ideal of a middle-aged, cis, white, able-bodied dude, middle class. whenever you differ from that, you're already not the quote-unquote norm. You're not the ideal. It is a radical political act to get up in the morning as one of the deviants, of how I like to call it, like in my not so super duper academic terms, because even though I do have an academic title, I don't like to use it that often, honestly. And to say, no, I'm okay. I'm okay the way I am.
Oh, without question. I mean,
yeah.
Being fat and being visible, and especially being unapologetic about it, is a type of activism. You know, just simply living your life in that way is a radical state of being.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I would be very, very, very sad if we were not to talk about all the things, how you say in the US, I learned it in Vape Camp, all the things that you are doing on a weekly, monthly, like you are all over the place, and I really want to talk about it. So
I stay busy. It is true. I keep myself busy.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is it? Was it what? Like, let us look into your calendar for a little bit. Like, what are you doing?
I mean, if we talk about it the way that you kind of presented it, so my weekly foray into fat activism, I do, as you kind of already mentioned actually earlier in the show, I do have a Fat Positive Podcast. It's actually a radio show here in New Zealand. It's a weekly radio show on an access channel, which is like, I don't know how to explain it for an international audience. It's the AM radio. Mm-hmm. Like it's the radio that the government pays for. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing. So it's like the community radio. I think it's phenomenal, but I have a Fat Positive radio show on the Manawatu People's Radio here in Palmerston North. And it's then podcast onto like Apple and Spotify and I think a few other places. And I think that's where most people listen. I don't actually think I have a large listenership here in New Zealand on the radio. Although I know there are some, because my show's actually been picked up by quite a few other access stations around the country. And I got feedback from one of the station managers, I think now 2 years gone by, that my show, when they air it, like they air my show, even though it's not, you know, their own person making it, but they air it like Saturday morning to like 4 a.m., you know, so I'm obviously not like a prime spot and stuff, but that's fine. Whatever they want me is fine. But he was sharing with me the story that they had had some kind of technical issue over a weekend. And so my show, along with a lot of others, didn't end up airing. And he said that they actually got a query in from a gentleman who identified himself as a truck driver who drove trucks overnight in the hills in that part of New Zealand, who was really dismayed that my show didn't air when he normally would listen to it. And I thought, okay. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I do. If I get up to nothing else during the week, I do have a weekly Fat Positive podcast that has been on since 2011. So yeah, this is its 10th year. We will be celebrating its official like 10-year birthday later in the year in August when we get to the actual 10-year mark. But I'm pretty proud of that show. One of the kind of core parts of both my activism and my scholarship is wanting to provide as many opportunities as possible for fat voices to be heard. Mm-hmm. I've already talked about, you know, how I believe in fat epistemology. And so a lot of my work itself is geared towards helping to do that. So letting other fat people talk, amplifying fat voices as often as I can. And my show is one of the key ways that I'm able to do that. And so I'm very fond of it. I'm also really keen to build the academic discipline of fat studies itself. I love the fact that it's a discipline. I love the fact that I have hosted conferences and have also been able to be in other spaces hosted by other people where fat studies scholars and activists have come together to share our work with one another and to collaborate and to network. I never feel more accepted than I do in those spaces because I'm always the fattest person in the room, even usually in fat studies and fat communities kinds of things. But it's quite often that I'm the only fat person in the room. And so, you know, there's something incredibly calming about just the kinetic nature of being in a room full of other fat people or being in a pool full of other fat people at like a fat swim party.
Fuck yes.
No.
Sorry, I can't contain myself.
No need, obviously. So one of the monthly things that I do is I host what I call a Fat Studies Moo. So I was trying to do a play off a MOOC, which is an English term for a massive online open course that was all the rage, probably 10 years ago now, where Harvard and Open University in the UK, they were hosting these MOOCs where people could register for free to be part of a massive class of like 1,000 people to learn a topic from like an expert who was a great teacher. So the idea with the MOO, which is kind of like the MOOC, I wanted to provide an opportunity for fat studies scholars or people who wanted to learn more about fat studies to come together because we don't have any other official structure within academia. You cannot study fat studies anywhere in the world. You can't get a qualification in fat studies anywhere in the world. There are a few actual classes that do exist. Oregon State University has actually had a fat studies course that's been on the books for over a decade, which is amazing. There have been a lot of courses that have come and gone. So like Samantha Murray in Australia you know, offered one for a time. I know that there used to be one up in the UK. I know currently, like, Caleb Luna is teaching one in California. Like, so there's been, you know, kind of a handful of, like, if you're lucky and you happen to be in that right place at the right time, but there's still no qualification. You can't get a bachelor's degree or a master's degree or a PhD in fat studies. And so the Fat Studies MOO idea is it's a 2-hour discrete event. So they're not necessarily connected. It's not like if you have to sign up for like a whole year. But each MOO is a different topic. And within that topic, there's a guest scholar who has been invited in specifically because they're an expert in that topic, if you would. The people that are going to, that register to attend, they basically like agree that they're going to read stuff ahead of time that there's like assigned to them, you know, like the course materials. And it's been really great. So we've had scholars from all over the world, Stephanie Von Liebenstein, who I know you know.
Oh, yeah. She's the founder of the German Association Against the Discrimination of Weight. I have to add that.
So she does stuff around fatness and the law. So like she came in and did a MOO on that. We had Laura Contreras from Argentina do a MOO actually in Spanish about fat in the global south. We had George Parker do reproductive justice and Natalie Ingram do public health. Like it's just been a really lovely mix. And as I said, people, you know, I advertise them about a month ahead of time and we get a nice group of people that are keen to just learn more about this specific topic. And I like to think of them kind of as like a 2-hour lecture, you know, that, you know, if you were in fact going to sit in a 15-week course, if you do about a year's worth of MOOs, you've almost in a way, you know, kind of had that same experience. So those have been going since I started them right after I came back from my sabbatical in Europe, actually, because I met so many graduate students in Europe who were doing fat studies scholarship in the best way they could, right? So they were in like sociology programs and public health programs and humanities programs, and they had supervisors that either were doing that work as well and could properly supervise them, or they had supervisors that were willing to let them do a fat studies project and would support them as best they can. And then they were augmenting with other fat studies scholars from around the world. And these students thought they were so excited and they were so keen that I thought, what can I do to help provide a space for not just those students, but also for myself to be able to learn more about the discipline, to be able to talk to each other about things. And yeah, that's where the MOO came from.
This is exactly the spirit that we both share, honestly. And this is like, I love to hear those stories because I have not been going out publicly about this, but fuck it. It's my podcast. I can cry if I want to. To me, like, it's my party and I can cry if I want to. So yeah, I am one of a few people in the German speaking realm who want to build a fat conference. I want something like No Lose in Canada that started as a grassroots conference led by fat people for fat people, and want to, you know, invite some experts, of course, scholars too, but also just, you know, your everyday run-of-the-mill fat person who found out how to alter clothing in order to make it fit, to upcycle clothing, to alter clothing, to sew their own clothing and to, you know, stick it to fast fashion, stick it to fashion, in fatphobic fashion in a way. And also, you know, people of all walks of life who are contributing to the fatosphere. I mainly do it to, bring visibility to fat voices, like I said, but you know, I'm selfish too. I want to learn as well. I want to learn and grow as well and help other people learn and grow as well. I love that about you. I think that this is such a beautiful spark to have in general as a person. And I love that you are doing all that you can in order to provide a platform to people to, you know, it's just, we live in this weird, very, very, very toxic culture, neoliberal capitalist bullshit culture who fosters behaviors that are in ultimately just putting us down and making us miserable even more by, artificially enhancing some sort of competition that has never been there to begin with. So this whole like bitchiness, this whole, and I mean bitchiness for all genders, not just women and femmes, this whole like bitchiness and this whole just like, oh no, you're not, you don't have the title, so you can't speak, or oh no, honey, you have just been doing that for half a year, we're not letting you in. Bullshit. I call bullshit on that. And yeah, so I wanna do this. I wanna see this happen. I wanna educate people. I want to create this beautiful, beautiful space, because what you've been saying earlier, that there is this amazing kinetic energy in a room full of fat people. It's not just kinetic, it's just without even you having to say a word, you feel that there is community. And it's not just bonding over shared trauma. That's, yeah, there too, of course, but that is not the basis of it. It's just, yeah, being in this room full of people who are unapologetically themselves. That is just powerful.
Having a shared language, I think, is something that oftentimes it's easy to overlook how comforting that is. Kath Reed, who some of your listeners might know, is the Fat Heffalump from Australia, although now she lives here in New Zealand. She attended the first Fat Studies conference that I hosted in 2012 and gave just the most amazing paper about fat ethics, really. Like, she didn't call it fat ethics, but she was talking about how she and other fat activists in Australia had recently been exploited and used by a non-fat scholar who had gotten a bunch of grant money basically to study like the lived experience of obese people in Australia. And her paper was just so powerful. And she blogged about her experience at the conference afterwards. And one of the things that she talked about and highlighted was that just having a shared language with the people in the room, with not having to explain any like basic fat politic 101, you know, not having to talk about any of that in her talk, not having to preface things that she was going to say with, you know, because of course we know that, you know, there's nothing, you know, wrong with, or it's not about how, like, not having to actually have any of that in her presentation for her and in the experiences that she had over 2 days. She talked about how incredibly powerful that was, just because that's the language that so many of us involved in this kind of activism and scholarship have had to develop. You know, have had to put the claimers and the qualifiers and the justifications and the, yeah. I just had my first desk rejection in over a decade. Like, I have plenty of stuff rejected, believe me, but it's my first desk rejection in a long time. For the listeners, a desk rejection is when you send a paper to an academic journal, the editor at large is the one who usually sends it off then for review. And if you get a desk rejection, though, the editor at large didn't even send it to the reviewers. They immediately have sent it back to you to say, we're not even going to look at this. Usually a desk rejection is because, I shouldn't say that. There's a whole bunch of reasons. Anyway, I got my first one in a long time, just a few months ago, for an article that I had sent to a disaster risk journal that was about fatness and COVID-19 and how governments were trying to shift the blame away for their governments. Western governments, especially the United States and the UK, were trying to shift away blame for their lack of preparedness and lack of getting anything done and handled around COVID onto fat people, trying to shift that blame. And so we thought, my co-authors and I thought, this disaster risk journal, and the larger piece too was about like, this isn't the first time this has happened. And like, we talked about how even though fat people are half the population, they're not usually included in the planning or even in the drills in disaster situations. And so like, we then end up with people being left behind to die in like Katrina in the States or in Superstorm Sandy in New York, simply because they weren't able to evacuate the very fat people. So we thought this piece needed to be in this journal, but the editor at large initially rejected it and said, for the reason that we had used the term fat, which was a pejorative term, inappropriate for scientific analysis. And what we had failed to do as the authors of this, submitting this to this journal, that we should, you know, we didn't think they would have a fat studies you know, whatever. But we failed to include that paragraph that you put in like the first couple paragraphs of your piece to say, we use the term fat because this is why we object, we, you know, reject the use of these other O words. Like, I, you know, we just had forgotten to do that. And, you know, I was the first author on that piece, so I will take the blame for that. I've been really lucky that most of the work that I've been publishing has been in fat studies places specifically, and you don't have to have that conversation in the fat studies place. You don't have to explain why you're using the term fat. So yeah, I think having that shared language, not having to, you know, have those kinds of conversations or qualifiers or content note kinds of things are part of the real value in having those fat spaces, whether they're activist spaces, scholarship spaces, spaces of both, what have you.
Yeah. So true. So true. I'm just mindful of time, and that's a totally coachy thing to say. You know, I'm mindful of time. Yeah, because I'm a life coach now. We haven't seen each other in 4 years. Life coach, certified intuitive eating counselor. I feel like I want to celebrate with you. Just look how far I've come, mommy. No. Validate me. No. But yeah, it's weird. You pick up some shit that coaches say. I'm mindful of time. I love that phrase. And also I trained at a British coaching school, so they all had a delightful British accent that kept me going through it and made it so much more enjoyable. So if anyone hears that and wants to become a transformational life coach just as I am, I can wholeheartedly recommend Anima's coaching school, and I'm not affiliated with them in any way, shape or form. They don't pay me to say that. It's just that this experience has been delightful and I want to share it. So yeah, I'm mindful of time, and I could talk to you all day. You know this. I could talk to you all day. I could laugh with you all day. I could sing karaoke with you all day. But I know that for me, it's pretty early in the morning. For you, it's pretty late at night. How can people learn more about you? How can they find you? How can they explore what you got cooking? Tell me.
So like most of us, I have a quite large social media presence. An easy landing page for the people that aren't familiar with it is actually the About Me page. And so that's just About Me/, and for mine, it's Friend of Marilyn, because that is the name of my show, the name of my blog, and whatnot. I am on Twitter, though. Twitter, Facebook, I have a YouTube channel, I'm on Instagram, kind of all the places that you're, like, quote-unquote, supposed to be. I'm not on TikTok. I'm not on Snapchat. Like, I'm not cool. I want to make that really clear in case any of the listeners might have been fooled into thinking I was cool. I am not cool. I am a square as they come, except I'm actually incredibly rotund and round. But yeah, so, you know, there's like basically, if you Google my name, and especially if you like include the word fat, I'm pretty sure you'll be able to track me down. I am very, as I've already mentioned, like, I am really committed to amplifying the voices of fat people and highlighting the voices of fat people and building the discipline of fat studies. So if there's anyone listening who's keen to learn more or like wants to participate in the Muse, if you're on Twitter, like, I'm a regular participant of the hashtag fat study group. So I actually just did one yesterday where, like, I use it for me to kind of help with the reading. So if I read an article that's relevant, I'll live tweet it as I read it under that hashtag. But also, if there's anything that I can do, you know, to help support anyone listening in their own fat study scholarship, fat activism, please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm very much here to kind of help support as much as I can to help people maybe learn from the mistakes that I've made along the way. But, you know, also, I'm very committed to supporting the work of activists as much as I can financially as well, because I recognize that I am quite privileged to be in a position where I do have a disposable income that I can use for that purposes. So I'm always on the lookout for fat positive Patreon accounts that I can add to support, for fat positive GoFundMes, or give a little, or any kind of crowdsourcing. If you've got ideas like that and projects that you're wanting to do, please make sure they get in front of my eyes, because one, I'll help you promote them through my own social media network and on my show. But also, I will send you, if I've got some at the time, and like I said, I'm usually lucky to do so, I will send you some money, because that's one of the privileges I carry, and I take that responsibility very seriously.
Oh, what? That's beautiful. Yeah. I feel this so deeply, so deeply. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Kat. It has been an absolute delight to talk to you. And I don't want to take in more of your time. And you know, I could talk to you all day, and I hope that I will again. So yeah, I hope that I will again. Of course, you are invited back. Like at any time that you have something cooking, or that you just, you know, want to talk about Berlin or anything like that.
Listen, yeah, maybe I can be like a yearly guest.
That would be awesome.
Just you invite me back.
Yeah.
You invite me back every year, and we'll come and we'll talk about new initiatives or new things. I mean, one of the things that's I'm really excited about for this year, 2021, is that the International Handbook of Fat Studies is being published by Routledge this year. And that's a really cool thing. It's a project that I've been involved in myself and the other editor, Sonia Renee Taylor, from The Body is Not an Apology. She and I have been working on this book for what kind of feels like forever. Not to say that, like, we're so proud of this book. Like, we're so proud. But it was a labor of love in the sense of just how long it ended up taking to kind of all pull together. But it's a great text. It's the first handbook that's been put out. So as you mentioned, there was the Fat Studies in Deutschland that came out in 2019, I think. And there was a Fat Studies in the UK that came out in 2009, the same year as the Fat Studies Reader. And there's been other like edited collections, and there's actually been a lot of anthologies. So like non-scholarly kind of collections of things that have come out. But this will be the very first handbook. So super excited about that coming out. Very pleased and proud that it really does stick to the epistemology and the ethics that I think are really key to fat studies. So there are 30 authors that have contributed to this handbook, and 15 of them are academics and 15 of them are activists. And they range all over the world, from Iceland to India to South Africa to China to Canada. Like, oh, I'm just so excited. Now, the thing about the handbook, though, I will say, just as we, because I know we need to wrap up, but handbooks are stupid expensive. So, like, I think this handbook on the Routledge page is like $500 US. that is purposeful on the publisher's part, because they only expect libraries to order them. So please know first and foremost that none of the authors or even the editors see any of that money. It's not the way it works in academic publishing. we don't get a dime. But what we are encouraging people to do is to just ensure that your library orders it. So whether it's your local university library or even your local community library, please encourage them. Like most libraries have a method, usually online, where you can request a book that they can order to have in stock that they don't already have. So we're encouraging as many people as possible to ask their libraries, because we would like to see a Fat Studies handbook in every library in the world. And yeah, so pretty excited about that.
Yeah. This is so awesome. This is so awesome. And yes, spoiler, there are pieces from contributors in Germany. So just to say it out there, just to mention it out there. Yeah. And I'm, it's great to finally see things happen in that regard. It's just great to make it happen and to see it happen. And, I'm even more honored to talk to you today. I mean, I'm honored to talk to you today any day, just because you're absolutely delightful, but to actually talk to someone who's at the spearfront of this, that is also amazing. So yeah, thank you.
I mean, I firmly believe that the future is very fat. Mm-hmm. And so I am very excited about what I see both in the scholarly field and also the activist field and the places that those two things intersect around fatness. I'm so excited for what the future is going to bring, both in Germany, also here in New Zealand, and also just around the rest of the world. So you and I have front row seats, my friend, to see the fat liberation, fat liberation in process.
Yep. Ah, yep. And you can be absolutely sure that we got popcorn and we got nachos and we got them snacks.
And chocolate. I like a little chocolate on the side of my popcorn. Yeah.
We got them all. We got them all. And we don't snack shame. So there you go. Thank you so much, Kat. And I really like the yearly wrap up. Let's make this a thing. Beginning of next year.
Sounds good, Dawn.
Beginning of next year. Thank you. I will see and hear you again. And have a lovely night, I think, back in New Zealand. Yeah. Thank you so, so much. Bye. I don't know about you, but I'm not crying. You crying was really, I had a couple of moments where I teared up during the editing of this podcast, especially the end when Kat was mentioning supporting fat activists, just fat scholars around the world, because she has been an avid supporter of this podcast. So yeah, and it was kind of hard for me to edit this, not gonna lie. And I also want to give credit where credit is due and thank one person in particular for making this happen, actually, because without her feedback, you would not be listening to this podcast episode today. And that is Substantia Jones, founder of the Eddie Positivity Project, which is a beautiful calendar of fat people, like with beautiful, beautiful photography. Regan Chastain was part of it. Substantia herself, of course, as well. A lot of plus size models, heavily tattooed ones. April Flores, who is a fat porn star, was on it a couple of times. And Substantia is, or was, Kat's best friend, or one of Kat's best friends. And I wrote to her and told her, hey, Substantia, I'm kind of sitting on this podcast episode, and I don't know what to do with it. I don't know if I should edit it or not. I don't know if I should publish it or not. I don't want to seem disrespectful to anyone. I don't want to do anything that could hurt people or cause pain to people. And I wanted to read you out loud, dear listener, what Substantia answered to me. Hi, Dot. I'm going to pretty confidently suggest you go ahead with it, and I'll tell you why. Kat was such a dynamo with so many irons in the fire, I've gotten a lot of messages just like yours. Folks are publishing academic articles she wrote. There are two episodes of her Friend of Marilyn's show in the can that will be broadcast as planned, etc. I say go for it.
If you had her permission to use it, my feeling is you should use it as planned. I know it's what she would have wanted. Her private funeral service was today, and the tone was one of both sadness and joy, I have no doubt. Use the interview. If anybody complains, have them talk to me. So, folks, you heard it. If any of you complains about this, talk to Substantia Jones. I will link her down in the show notes for you. And in a way, you know, I'm smiling a little bit about this because we are keeping her alive and her memory alive by broadcasting podcasts like this one, by publishing the articles, by talking about her and her work. And now this podcast is part of this legacy. And in a way, that does indeed make me proud, proud to have known her. So in this spirit, take care, enjoy life to the fullest, live your best fat life now. Do not wait for anything. Be unapologetic about your body, because guess what? You only live once, as far as we know.
You may have noticed I am large. I can't hide it. It's no secret. It's a fact. I'm technically obese. I'm wobbly, jiggly, and round. In a word, quite frankly, I'm fat. The word fat can sometimes cause a bit of shock. Some people are offended, but I'm not. I've owned it and reclaimed it, and I'm not afraid to say it. I'm fat, and frankly, I rock. I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large, and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's just some of why my fat body rocks. The war on obesity's a pile of shit. They just wanna sell you one more diet book. They spend $650 billion round the world. So we're at war against the way that people look. Some people wanna clutch their pearls and worry about us. They should be dieting. Dear God, what about their health? But there's no correlation between health and my appearance. So you can keep your damned opinions to yourself. I won't apologize for taking up space in the world. I'm living large and I'm not gonna stop. My body sings and dances, and it's a tiger in the bedroom. And that's why my fat body rocks.